I'm wrestling, do not weep for me. Celebrate what I am. Celebrate what I have been. Celebrate what I represent. And celebrate the many ways I have impacted your life. I will survive this test as I have survived others. I am forever etched into the very fiber of all mankind. The world needs me. Time is on my side. History guarantees me. I am wrestling. Do not wait for me.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to Sad to Say, episode 107, which will be the last episode that Mr. Tommy and I always do, brought to you as always by Defend Soap, Defend What You've Built, and Dahlmer Mats. And Tommy, we've been trying to put this together for a few weeks now. So we're telling our listeners this is the last episode we will ever do together. I think it's been a fun run. What's new with you, man?
Not much, brother. And I do announce this with you with some regret, but it is the right decision for a number of reasons. And what's new with me is same as what's always been with me, which has been why it's been difficult to schedule our podcast. I'm busy for a lot of good reasons. Busy with business, busy raising four kids. I'm on the road a lot. And simply put, Ben, I just can't dictate my schedule. I can't control it the way that I would prefer to control it. And I can't let you down. I can't let our followers down anymore. So I gotta take a step out of this.
Sure.
But other than that, man, I'm good. I'm still following the sport like a madman.
That's fair. Let's talk about where I'm going to go from here, because you're stepping out, and I'm hoping you're going to pop in as a guest commentator once in a while. That's what I'm actually hoping.
That's the expectation. When we started this, as strictly 100% a hobby, and it always was a hobby, but I think that because of my schedule, I will be able to, and I want to pop in, and I want to be a regular guest, so I expect for that to happen. You better let me on.
So what we're getting at is that I'm going to take this show on the road. Tommy, oh my God, I just looked. I said it's actually episode 109 that we're on, and that will be our final episode.
Another reason why I need to retire.
All good. I will be starting the Rudest Wrestling Podcast with Matt Dernlund. Matt Dernlund is former Binghamton head coach at Penn State, been around the sport forever. We are probably going to start up in about 2 weeks. The plan is to make it a twice weekly show, probably Monday, Thursday is what we're looking at right now, maybe Tuesday, Thursday. We're going to do video format as well. And, with Matt now works for Rudest. He's kind of in charge of what will now be the media portion. And he's going to, part of his job, part of his full-time job is this podcast. So we are going to be able to be super consistent. We're going to be able to deliver two podcasts a week. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think you and I have developed a good camaraderie, a good relationship. But, Matt's pretty funny, pretty witty also. So I think him and I can kind of do the same thing that you and I have, hopefully.
Well, I think so. I mean, I think obviously I'm involved at Rudest, so I'm happy for it to continue in a way where I still have some direct, association with what's going on. And I think that it will be something that continues on and probably improves. Although I think some of the conversations we have, I think it's going to be a while for you and Matt to really get down and dirty the way that you and I get down and dirty.
Yeah.
But that's to be expected. I think it's going to be a great, great dynamic, great thing for wrestling. Two episodes a week, 52 weeks a year, plus or minus, depending on situation.
And we're also we're really talking about what we're talking about today is doing some more game day type of stuff. Tommy, I actually let you down. You got us press passes to the NCAA tournament last year, and I was not able to make it. But Matt and I are trying to hash that out ahead of time. I think we're going to pick out a few really cool duels that we can go to. And podcast from there. We're gonna go to the NCAA championships for sure. We're gonna do an episode after every session, I believe it is. So we are going to kind of take this thing to the next level, if you will.
No, I think the production value and the frequency of content and the organizational structure, I'm sure it's no secret. It's going to be way better than you and I could have ever done and have done, Ben. And I'm excited about that. And I hope that I can be a little spice to the stew every now and again, be a guest, hopefully frequently during the wrestling season or when I feel the need to rant or you think I'd be a good guest for the topic. But it should be fun. I think that there's a lot of tentacles associated with this media platform that Rudis is creating with you. And I think the podcast is the tip of the spear, and it's the beginning, but there's going to be a lot of fun things that go on with it.
Awesome. Yeah. And I agree. So let's not make this too sappy and too sad. Let's get into this. I know we had three or four topics that we wanted to hit and talk about today, before we sign off for good. Is that fair?
I'm in. Let's do this.
Well, the first one I want to talk about, I think we could make a whole podcast episode about this because I think it doesn't just apply to this individual, but I think it has larger implications as well. Daniel Kirklevett, which you will be very happy with because he just committed to the Ohio State. But what we've seen, and we've talked about this man many times, he originally committed to the University of Minnesota. You at that point made the argument that was dumb because Gable's going to be there and he's going to be a heavyweight also. You were proven right. He then decommitted, committed to Oklahoma State very quickly afterwards, decommitted from Oklahoma State, opened up his recruitment. A lot of people, most people thought he was going to Penn State, as we were all hearing that Cale was recruiting him hard. And he ends up going to Ohio State, which, man, just the journey there before he even gets to college is fantastic, right?
I'm ecstatic with the end result. At least I think it's the end result. But
yeah, you never know. He could be going for four.
Yeah, man. And, you look at the whole commit-decommit thing that you and I have spoken about. And candidly, I think the first one was legitimate, right? I mean, they're all legit.
Him going to Minnesota?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think he committed to Minnesota at a time where he thought he was a 97-pounder. I'm not putting words in his mouth or his family's mouth, but, I think that's probably the way it went down. And then you realize
– obviously, I think him and Gable are friends, so he's probably like, hey, yeah. I get to go to college with my best friend. We're going to be a killer 1-2 punch, bam, pow. So, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, Ben, you stand next to this kid, and it's very clear. Well, he's not really a kid, but he is a kid, if you know what I mean.
Well, he's only 17. He was still a cadet this year.
It's just very clear that he is absolutely destined for heavyweight.
Come on, man. He's 97.
I do think there's a small chance that he might stay he might not be a heavyweight international, but even still, I just don't doubt.
Well, heavyweight international, you only have to make 213 or 215.
Yeah, so that it's doable, but I don't even know if that's what's best for him. I think him being a 240-pound monster is probably what's best for him. But
yeah, absolutely. So I mean, I think you and I agree on this one a lot. So I don't know that we're gonna have too much of a debate. But this is where, and again, we see it all the time, kids decommitting and people saying, oh, why can't they stand by the commitment? This kind of crap, which is like,
right.
You and I both feel very strongly against that. I mean, he committed at a time when he was 16. And then, no, I believe he was 15 when he committed. And, 15-year-old kids do a lot of stupid things. And then obviously, he had a great reason for decommitting that, hey, he's going to sit on the bench for 2 to 3 years. Right. And so, I mean, in my estimation, absolutely no fault on the kid. If there's one fault he would have had, and this is what all kids do, he got excited, he committed to Oklahoma State. He probably should have sat on that one, waited a while to make that decision. But, all these college coaches are putting crazy pressure on these kids right now. So it's hard when these young kids hear from these college coaches and, the college coaches are saying, well, the offer is only on the table for 2 more weeks or whatever the time period they put on it.
Well, yeah, the truth is that in a perfect world, I think we would all prefer, if it were our children, to make a commitment once and never have to change that decision. I mean, you don't want – it's not the goal when you commit. Your goal is to not change your mind. So, obviously, when this happens, it's not a good thing, but it's so much more relatable and understandable to me when the process allows for and, in fact, kind of backs kids into a corner where they're forced to make decisions before – they know what they want. They know what they're capable of. They even know what weight class they're going to be. And so it's common. It's an easy thing to see how it could happen or transpire. And I don't like it, but I am empathetic to why it happens. And if I was a college coach, if I had a kid commit prior to his senior fall, I would say all that means is I'm his number one choice and I got to keep recruiting the dog dew out of him. That's how I would feel if I
commit out of a sophomore. I agree 100%. And, you know, frankly, where I would go is if I was in charge of NCAA, obviously I would change the regulations where you can't recruit kids that early. There's just no sense in it. Kids change their mind. Programs change. Coaches change. There's just so much that changes. So the recruiting process, in my estimation, should happen significantly later. But obviously until the rules change, it ain't going to change. Let me ask you this. Because, Tommy, I was like, when this happened and I was hearing about this, and I was really wishing we had our show at that time because I just needed. I didn't call you.
We did not have our show. We just took a long break.
Okay, well, whatever it was, I didn't get to talk about it. I can't remember who I called and talked to about this, but it might have even been Matt, who's going to, you know, Matt Durnland, the new podcast host. So we both had heard that Cale was recruiting Kirk Levitt hot and heavy at one of the national team camps, right? That he was wrestling with him and blah 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 blah. And I thought just that in itself was such a fascinating topic because, I mean, obviously if you go to Penn State, there's this recognition that they're going to recruit the best kids, obviously, no matter what, right? But they had just gotten Seth Nevels, you know, whose brother Nick Nevels is on the team. He's a huge heavyweight, so it's not like there's any changing weight classes in this scenario. So it's like... Obviously, Seth's older brother, Nick, who's now been on the team for 4 years, he's probably built some friendships. He's probably close with a lot of the kids. And so it's like, you know, I was curious, like, what kind of, you know, division could that put in the team that Cale was willing to go out and recruit someone who would then come in and take Seth Neville's spot? And it's not like Seth Neville's can just bump up to the next week class or go down. You know, he's essentially on the bench for the whole career. What do you think about that? I mean, am I right on the point that's going to create division, or is it just you think that's accepted at Penn State?
I think it's I think it really is an interesting dynamic because Ohio State has a similar but not the same situation at Ohio State with
Singletary.
But I think some things can be done there. But even still, it creates that.
So Singletary going down because that's what everyone else is assuming.
I think there's a possibility that could happen one day, but I think it's a couple years away anyway, and all those types of things. But I think the truth is that I think it depends on the culture you have in your program, and if that type of tactic reflects how you are 365 days a year. Because I think if the kids are not surprised by the angle that you take on the recruiting front, and it is truly who you are as a coaching staff, then the kids should be more receptive to it. But if you've been singing from one hymnal for years and then all of a sudden you have a sudden change in your behavior as a coach on the recruiting front, I think that's where the kids have more division than not. And I know Tom Ryan does a phenomenal job, and it is a reflection of who he really is, that we're going to go get the best guys.
No matter what, in every scenario. Is that what he says?
We're going to do what's best for this program. And in theory, what's best for this program should be what's best for you, right? And so I think I know he believes that. And I think to an extent, that is more true than not really in any program. But it does create that there can only be 10 starters. And at certain weight classes, there's nowhere to turn other than win your wrestle off or make your varsity spot. So I'm not answering it in a very clear way, Ben, but I think that Cale.
No, I mean, you are answering it, Tommy. I mean, you know what's so funny is I just had I just did a Mental Monday. My Mental Monday, you know, maybe we can discuss this, and this kind of fits in this topic, was on sympathy, empathy, and guilt. And I was kind of talking about kids in my room maybe taking it easy on each other because they felt, you know, some sympathy that, hey, he's kicking, but how that really at the end doesn't do anyone any good, but you also have to have this balance because if you say kill a kid too much, then you know, they're not maybe not going to be there. You know, and in my room, it's a little different because we have a lot of competitive kids and I can switch them around. But, you know, in a high school room where maybe there's only a couple of them, that's where it really gets difficult. But, I mean, I guess, you know, I guess what you're saying no matter what, under any circumstance, we're going to get the best kids that we can get. And, you know, listen, and you know what? Honestly, I didn't think I was going to agree with you, but I guess I do agree with you.
I think it has to be – you have to be about that. You have to truly be about that because we're talking about humans, right? And so it doesn't matter what you say. It's how you make someone feel. And if you're about that from the time you walk into that kid's living room when he was 17 or whatever the rules are now, and then when he's 20 and he's a redshirt sophomore and you get some blue chipper to come in his weight class, if you've been about that message – from the time you walked into his living room to the time he's now on the other end, he's not going to like it, but he's going to be about it too because that's what he signed up for. And so I really think it depends. It's highly dependent on the staff, the culture, the leadership. Does it really reflect your values and who you are and what you stand for? And I know at Ohio State, that is the case. Why wouldn't it be the same at Penn State? So to me, it seems a little more ridiculous, and you can make the other argument, Ben. We're talking about an individual sport. You could say that you completely sold the kid out. His future is completely in shambles now, blah, blah, blah. You could do that, but
there is a
team element. There's a program element of a sport, and so there are lessons to learn. There is value to be gained from kids being put in these positions. And so if you're about it and that's what your culture reflects, I think it's okay.
Yeah. Wow, that was good, Tommy. That was not what I was expecting. I liked it. That was great.
Let me add one thing.
Yeah.
I learned to think that way when I was on Tom Ryan's staff beginning, I think, in 06 or 07. I learned to think that way. If you would ask me that question 12, 13, 14 years ago when I was 24, 5, 6, any time prior to that, I would have said, you can't do that. It's not right. You're breaking apart the honor of what's good about wrestling and the fact that it's an individual sport, blah, blah, blah. But I've learned to think the way that I just, you know, kind of explained.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and frankly, Penn State's, I mean, what, 2 years ago they won a national title in half the damn weight classes. So I guess the expectation to go there is to win the national title. And if you're not the best, then kind of so what, right?
I kind of remember, I mean, I'm sure you felt this way, Ben, and I think it's a rare way to think, but – you know, in my mind, when I went to Ohio State and when we were recruiting guys around my weight, or when I chose to commit to Ohio State and there was some good guys in the weight, you know, in my mind, it was like, I want to be the best in America in college wrestling. Yeah. So it doesn't matter who they put in front of me in practice or in a dual meet or in a tournament. I have to be the best in my weight class in the United States. So although I don't want the number two guy to be my wrestle-off, it is what it is. I've burned my boat, so to speak, and I got to be a national champion.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Actually, you know what? I told you – I think I probably brought this up on the podcast before, but I wrote a book at one point with a sports psychologist, and we never published it because it wasn't good enough. But one of the things that we did is we sent out questionnaires, 10-question questionnaires, to any NCAA champion in the past 50 years. So at this point – I wonder if you returned yours, Tommy. I should try. I have a staff
from our school. I did.
Okay, I should go look back and find your answers.
Look it up. I would love. And you know what? I think I'm a different me now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that would be fascinating to see that. So anyways, my favorite answers of all of them was, and I'm gonna misquote this, but I'm gonna get the gist of it correctly. Mark Schultz said something like, you know, when I think about going out to wrestle my opponent, I think about, you know, if that guy was in the room with me every single day, would I let them beat me every single day? And the answer is no. There's no way I'm going to let someone beat me every single day in and day out. So I knew when I went out there, I was confident that I could handle that situation. And, you know, kind of what one of the things I learned from all that stuff is that everyone has a little different way of thinking of why they deserve to win or why they think they should win or whatever it is, you know? But obviously, you know, that's him putting his mindset in there. And, you know, I try to use that with my kids today. It's like, especially, you know, if we have a, say, a national team training situation in Wisconsin and we throw some of the other better kids, go out there and try to hammer them the best that you can in that practice. And that way, you know, when it does come time for the matches late in the season, they're going to remember what that felt like.
Right. I like it. And I do think, I think everyone, it's a highly mental sport. Most sports are. And it's all about what you've done in your mind to make yourself feel like you should win. And that's the greatest advantage you can give yourself going into those matches.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, hey, so give me some feedback here. So I'll kind of just tell you what I said yesterday. So I do my Mental Mondays every Monday on Facebook. You guys can check them out if you're listening to this and you have not seen them. But I was talking about sympathy, empathy, and I was kind of just talking about the situation where and I didn't have a final answer, Tommy. I wish I kind of had like a panel to discuss this with, because I don't feel like I have a final answer, but I feel like the answer I'm going to give you and the questions I'm going to ask you are better than what's out there now, because it's right. A topic no one really talks about. And I said, the one thing I hate is when, you know, a coach, they say, just get tougher, just be try to beat him no matter what, you know? And I
don't like that.
I think the answer is just so much more complicated than that. Right. You know, and I know that the end result we're going to get to is that, you know, sympathy in itself doesn't really help anyone accomplish anything.
Right.
But I think there's, you know, guys, I brought up a couple stories. And so, you know, you can take this where you want to, but I brought up my 5-year-old and she's kind of faking injuries in her gymnastics class that she goes with my mom right. to. And so I said, well, I'm not going to challenge her on the injuries. I'm just going to say, okay. So I said, hey, Alex, you know, You might get hurt, but it's really important when you get hurt to pop back up and get back in there, because, listen, that's life, that's sport. When you're going to get hurt sometimes, you just got to get back up and get in there even if it hurts. No big deal, you know? So I'm not challenging your injury, but I'm saying, hey, you know, we have to deal with that. So, you know, I think that I'm showing some sympathy.
It's the same message, but you're using tact. You're using empathy for what they're, you know, you're relating to what they're experiencing. And so that people can get behind that a lot easier, in my opinion.
Yeah, and then the other story I said was, you know, with the fast twitch muscle fiber guys, you know, Nick Marable was one that I used as an example. One summer we wrestled once a week and we do a really long extended go. And the idea was not that he was going to get in that much better shape, right? He's a sprinter. A sprinter's never going to be a marathoner. A marathoner's never going to be a sprinter. But the idea is that he would get comfortable wrestling with that kind of feeling. Being right. exhausted and dealing with it and figuring out how to, and you know, so when kids are getting real, and I've obviously done this with a lot of other people, when they get real tired, you don't say, you're a piece of crap, why are you so tired, pick right. it up. You say, hey man, doing great, let's go, keep going, keep pushing. And but then you keep kicking their ass, you know. So I guess, and I don't know, I'm not expecting you to have a final answer, but, you know, give me some feedback on that sympathy, empathy type of thing.
I totally agree with the approach. You know, I got 4 kids too. My oldest child is, she plays soccer. She's in the 6th grade. She's turning 12 in January. So she's kind of, you know, getting mature now, and she's very good at soccer. We're having lots of interesting conversations, and she struggles when it's really hot out, Ben. When it's really, really hot outside, like 90 degrees, humid, like it was this August, or
yeah, absolutely.
You know, and so she struggles. In my opinion, she has a harder time dealing with it than most girls. And you know, you could say to her, "Hey, you just got to get tough. You know, you're not being tougher than the other girls. They can deal with it, and you can't." But instead, you know, I say, "Hey, I know it's hot. I'm not gonna tell you it's not hot outside, but it is the same temperature for every other girl out there."
Yeah,
you have to learn to relate to what everyone else is going through and realize that if somebody else can deal with it, so can you. So you're, to me, it's like I'm sympathetic with the fact that it's hot. I'm empathetic to how she feels, but you're also pushing them in that direction of you have to change where your head is at. You have to change your mind because it's in the right place. And so,
I hear my funny. I got a funny story on the same topic. If you want to hear it, maybe you could tell Ellie this story if you'd like to. But you know, I used to be highly competitive in disc golf, which I actually, you know, Tommy, this summer I finished building a 9-hole disc golf course in my property. I'll be building another 9 next summer. To make 18.
You gonna make it open to the public or is it private?
Hell no! I don't want a bunch of weirdos on my property. Give me a break. My friends can come over. Right. I'm going to eventually build the academy on my property. And, you know, academy people will probably be able to play. And I'm thinking maybe doing like a pro tournament once in a while where people from – I would love to do tournaments, right, Tommy? But then the idea, if I do tournaments, then strange people know where the disc golf course is. Then strange people are going to show up. I don't really want strange people showing up, so therefore I can't have tournaments, unfortunately. I don't know. Is that fair?
No, that's good. Okay. I'm all good. I love how you think, man. Okay. I love it.
Cool. So, yeah, I don't want weird people showing up. Anyways, when I used to be highly competitive in disc golf, I desired really poor playing conditions, right? Because yeah. I was an athlete in another sport, and I was able, you know, especially wrestling. Wrestling has more adversity than almost anything, you know? And most of these disc golfers were kind of fat, out of shape, not great athletes, you know? And so I was hoping, like, for really windy conditions, because that makes it harder. Or I'd hope it was raining or really hot or something like that. Because I knew I would deal with whatever conditions there were significantly better than anyone else. And right. So, you know, I would be praying for the worst conditions possible, because I knew it was going to benefit me, because I knew I could hang in there and deal with it and be tough. And I knew other people weren't going to handle those same adversities the same way that I was. So I would always cheer for the bad weather.
You know, I do like that angle. I'm going to explain that to her. It's like, hey, it's a quicker weed out when you have tough conditions.
Absolutely. It really is, you know, because and my wife tells me I'm semi-delusional, and I find a way to make everything slanted to my advantage, even if it's not. So it could also just be that.
I think you are semi-delusional. I actually think she's like, you have to create the delusions sometimes. They almost are delusions in a way, Ben.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, a little bit.
So, but anyways, I didn't mean to steal your thunder, but it's almost like you do. I mean, a lot of great people that I talk about, even great people outside of sports, they talk about how they almost make themselves believe something that they intuitively know is maybe not practical, but they box themselves in to thinking that it's the only way.
Yeah, actually, you know what? That's funny. That brings me back to the book I wrote. It actually might have been – I'm thinking this might have been your form, Tommy. It might have been. It was so funny, and you can tell me if this is something you did, and this might be you. But it was really funny because back-to-back. It was like, you know, I would read through these forms, right, and I would try to kind of gather what all the data was telling us. And it was so, and it, you know, part of it is people delusional, like we're saying, but it was really funny because one of them said, you know, I needed to train all year round because that was what gave me advantage over my opponents who were not training year round, something to that effect, right? Right. And then the very next one was like, I really needed to take I can't remember if it was 6 weeks or 2 months off, because that's what my body really needs to recover. And I need that time off for my mind, and that's what allows me to get ready and crank it up during season again, or something to that effect.
Right.
Was that you or no?
Well, it sounds like me, but I don't remember me like typing that in for the, but like I do, I did have that in my mind. I needed to feel like I deserved to win, but I also needed to make sure my mind was rested for the push. Yeah. And so I did have that balance on a 12-month calendar. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, yeah, so it was funny, though, because obviously those guys, both whoever wrote that, won a national title because we only interview national champions.
Right.
And so one of them is saying, I need this. And the next one is saying, I need this, even though it's the exact opposite of what the previous one said.
Right.
So it was always just funny when you would see those things and how those things worked out.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Okay. Well, we got off on a tangent, which we always do.
I like it.
Yeah, that was a fun one. The last thing I wanted to hit up, and because you actually get to go, and I'm hoping I'm going next year.
Yeah, so I'm leaving the podcast, not forever, but just as a permanent fixture in the podcast, I'm leaving. However, I am finding time to take my last three vacation days of the year and watch the World Championships in Budapest, which
that's
I'm
so awesome.
I'm taking my oldest son. He doesn't know it yet. It's going to be a great trip.
Dude, we can't put this podcast out there. He's going to listen.
He doesn't listen.
His buddy at school is going to listen. Tommy, you're going to Budapest. Oh, man. Okay, so I have actually, here, truth be told, I've never been to World Championships. I made the Olympic team. That's the only one I've ever been to. I need to go. And then next year is in, was it in Kazakhstan? Astana, maybe?
And that's the biggest reason I'm going this year is because I know I'm not going next year. I'm hoping that I'm in Tokyo, but I just wanted to be at a World Championships. I went to the Vegas Worlds in 15, though, so that was good.
Yeah. So my wife was having a kid at that point, so that's why I couldn't go to that one.
Yeah, you're out on that. You're out.
So, okay. So, obviously, I think the person and the storyline you're probably most looking forward to will be Snyder versus Sedulayev. Am I right on that one?
I mean, yeah, of course. But I'm excited about a lot of matches. But, yeah, okay. Snyder-Liev Part 2 has got to be the number one matchup, right?
Well, I might say Burrows-Chamizo, but, I mean, we could slice it both ways.
You could say Burrows-Chamizo. You could say Snyder-Liev Part 2. You could say Taylor Yazdani-Chariti. You could say – those are the top three matchups, I think.
So let's go with – let's go with this. Flo did this a little while ago. I thought it was a lot of fun. So you and I can do this for the World Championships. We're gonna say who on we can go top five, top six. Who on Team USA we think is most likely to win a gold medal? And we don't need to go all the way down to number 10, but we could probably go say 1 through 6, 1 through 7. Are you down for this or what?
I am. I'm excited about this.
Okay.
We gotta go through 10 though, Ben. Come on.
You want to go all the way to 10? Well, I don't want someone that who's Nishan. Probably Nishan's gonna feel bad.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
He's gonna be last place on mine.
Let's do 5. Let's do 5.
Well, let's see. Well, I just said he's gonna be last, so I guess the cat's out of the bag. Damn it. All right. I would go. Obviously, I'm going innocent until proven guilty. Kyle Snyder. He's won 3 in a row. Obviously, he just had the hiccup last month. What tournament was that again? The Medved or?
Yeah. Oh, no. It was at, where was he?
It was the Turkey one. The Turkey one.
Yazardoghu.
Yazardoghu, yep. It was at the Yazardoghu. Had a little hiccup there. But you know what? Kyle's had a little hiccup pretty much every single year he has. He's taken a loss or two or three. That's right. And he shows up to wrestle, every single time. And I guess the other thing here is, it's not, I would say it's not as deep of a weight class. There's not as many guys where I'm like, that guy can win.
Right.
So obviously, Flo just put up the world rankings, which, are probably the best world rankings. They just put those up the other day. And, when you look at them, Snyder lost to the number 3 guy. I think his name's Albarov, right? Is that the guy's name?
That he lost right.
Yeah. Yeah, Albarov. And then, when you look below that, it's like, man, there's no one that kind of even has a chance to beat him, I don't believe. And so
– Now, I've heard chirps that Yazdani, the old school Yazdani, the
fire – is coming hiding, back. I've heard this too.
I've heard that too. Now, and that doesn't mean that he's automatically shoots to the top of the pile with Snyder and Sajulayev, but that is a very interesting dynamic because that dude could flat out scrap.
Yeah, and and when you look at his body style, he has a body style that – right. Kyle will struggle with because, right. Kyle controls center, pushes a lot, and Yazdani doesn't get particularly tired, no. Which is something Kyle does to a lot of people. And so, it's a tough matchup. And, when you think about Yazdani's last match at the Olympics, what was that, 2 years ago? He got cheated. That was crap. I think it was the Georgian guy, maybe, Otakadze or something, that he got cheated against. Yep. And so, I would love to see it. Is he coming back for real? I don't know at this point. I don't have my ear to the rails on the international wrestling world. I wish I had some inside information, but I don't.
Yep.
So are you going Snyder number one?
I am. I mean, it's just like, to me, there's 3 guys, and their likelihood for gold is almost the same to me. But because of Snyder going for his 4th, and he's been winning world championships at a higher rate than the other two, one by an extremely small margin. I'm going to go
all of them by an extremely small margin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we got the same number one. And Sedulayev was talking about going 92 all year, but I don't see him going down anymore because it's like he's never going to go back down to 86. So kind of what's the point?
And why do you think he couldn't go that back down to 86? I mean,
I think I think they don't cut weight well. And the morning of the weigh-ins, which
that's fair.
The foreign wrestlers don't. Our wrestlers obviously at the collegiate level.
Well, with the new weigh-in rule, that kind of I take back what I suggested that he could do it with the new weigh-in rule. It's not possible.
Yeah, not possible. So him going to 92, I don't really see the point in that. So I see him staying at 97 kilo the whole time. Yeah, I hope Yazdanis comes back. He was one of the guys I really enjoyed watching him. You know, he's older than me, so watched him growing up and wrestling internationally. It'd be fun to see him come back. You know, but the older guys never have the pop that they used to have. No. So no. We'll see how he does.
Yep.
Okay, who's your number two? I mean, I'm guessing it's – well, maybe it's not obvious.
My number two is Burroughs.
Oh, okay.
For the same reasons that Snyder's my number one. And, you know, it's weird, though. My top three, though, it's just a tough call. But, yeah, I'm going with Burroughs.
Okay, so I thought you were going to go with Snyder. I'm sorry. Oh, my gosh. I'm an idiot. I thought you were going to go with David Taylor, who has been probably wrestling better than anybody. I mean,
the top three to me, I wouldn't be mad at anyone using the top three in any particular order. I wouldn't feel impassioned to disagree with them. And I don't mean to be vanilla on this, but it's just the truth, man. It's just the truth.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can agree with that. Obviously, David Taylor's been really hot lately. Yep. You know, the one guy he hasn't wrestled is the best guy. And, you know, if you go back and watch their match that they had in the World Cup in which Dave Taylor pinned him, I mean, Chirati was throwing him around for, you know, 2.5 minutes. And David did a great job.
David, the right guy won on that day. The right guy won.
Absolutely.
But
a lot of people would have got flustered under those circumstances. And David did a great job. Kept his composure, stuck in it, and then you know when Chirati exhausted himself, he was just, you know, he does what David Taylor does.
I think Chirati and Taylor is going to be an all out war, and I think that's a compliment to David, not a cut, because he whipped him a year ago. It's like,
well, you know, but he didn't whip him though. I mean, right? If we look at a year ago, you know, Chirati was whooping him for a while. David gassed him out and pinned him. And so, you know, I think what I was going to say is I think we're going to see a dramatically different match, a match in where Yazdanis Chirati tries to slow it down and he realizes kind of what pace David's going to wrestle at the whole time. And so I think it's probably going to be, you know, I could be wrong, but I think it's going to be a more tactical match than it was last time.
I think it will be close, but I think it'll be pretty action-packed. I mean, those guys, it's not in their DNA, either one of them, to kind of play the game a little bit. I mean,
so you don't think you could see a scenario where Chirati maybe gets to his underhook like he's getting to,
Chirati's going to dig underhooks to both sides like he does to everybody else. Yep. And David Taylor will not be able to contain himself. He will be creating action off of those holds, and it'll be lots of fun wrestling from that. That's kind of what I'm seeing. And when I watch both of them wrestle other people, is how can you possibly watch Yazdanis Chirati in all the matches you've watched him? How could you possibly see him not going forward and digging underhooks? I don't see him not doing that.
Yeah, I could just see him sitting a little more with the underhooks and maybe, you know, just kind of not pushing as hard as he did previously.
Well, I think you're right about that. I think he's going to be a little bit more intelligent about how he pursues Taylor, but I think he's going to get in on those hooks. And I think Taylor is not just going to circle out of him. That's not in his DNA. And so I just think we're going to see a lot of wrestling.
Yeah. I hope that's how it turns out. That would be fantastic.
Well, anyways, I'm going with Burroughs too. But you could make a strong argument that David Taylor has been the most dominant American for the past 365 days.
Yeah, you could make that argument very easily. And so, I think what this argument comes down to is very simple. Is Burroughs more likely to beat Chamizo than Taylor is to beat Chirati? Because when you really go deeper than that, you can't really see Burroughs or Taylor losing to anyone on down the list. I have a hard time seeing that.
And you can't see Snyder losing to anyone other than Sagalayev.
Well, you can make the argument easier because Alborov beat him couple weeks ago, you know?
That's right. And that's right. So,
you could make the argument a little easier. But do I think Snyder's going to lose to Alborov? No, I don't.
I'm going Snyder-Burroughs 1-2 because at this stage, they've proven, like David Taylor has at every other stage other than this one because he hasn't been on this one yet, they've proven that they will prevail. And so I have to go with them 1-2, but I mean, David is – it's like 1A, 1B, and 1C to me. is what I'm was what I'm saying here on these three guys.
He's such an ass kisser.
Serious, man. Like, I'm selling on Kyle Dake, and I think he can win the damn thing.
Okay, I'm going Snyder. I'm going Snyder 1, David 2, Burrows 3. We talked about them. You're going Dake. Are you going Dake 4?
I'm going Dake 4 because Gwiz and Green, I think there's no.
Well, Cox, I would say, I mean, Jaden's got – he hasn't looked great in the last year.
Good, man.
I mean, Jaden hasn't looked great. He's taking L's, but he has – obviously, he's had two attempts, and he's taken bronze both times.
I'm still taking Dake. And then it would be probably Cox, then Gwiz. I think you're right. So I would go Dake 4.
Green's also taking some losses. When you look at these international rankings, though, on Flow, it's effing mind-blowing. How many are Russia? I mean, I think like 61. You want to hear the countries, Ben, Tommy? It goes Russia.
Well, you think about
Russia.
You think about
Russia,
last year.
Russia, Georgia, Azerbaijan, Cuba. Russia, Russia. Belarus, Japan, Belarus. Mongolia, Russia. Iran, Bulgaria, Turkey, Russia.
Ben, you think about last year, though. We won the world championships, and it took an astronomical, historic American effort, capped off by a win over Sajalayev to close out the tournament, to beat Russia by the narrowest of margins, and that was just a typical Russian team.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you look at some of these weight classes, like that one is called, I named off, I mean, there's very few weight classes where we have two Americans ranked. There's a couple, like I think Stieber and Oliver, I think Dake and Dieringer. You know, there's a few of them, right? But then you look at some of these other weight classes and you see, you know, say 86 kilograms. It's Trotty, Taylor, Russia, Russia, Russia. And then number 7 is Italy, but it's Kudyabagamedov. That's a Russian. Number 8, Azerbaijan, Gatsiev. That's a Russian. I don't know this number 10 guy. Probably a Russian. You know? And so you go down the list and they're all, it's Turkey. The Turkey guy, he's a Russian. You know? It's like Russian, 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 Russian. And it just shows, you know, and I've advocated, and I guess it may be against American interest, I would still advocate for some type of system, wild card system, where, you know, a country can take a few more guys past the 10, one per weight class. I think that'd be a lot of fun, but that's probably in Russia's best interest.
I think it's in Russia's best interest, but I just think it's the truth. I think it's the right way to find out who the best on the planet is. And so I like it.
Yeah, but damn, Russia's deep. Okay, so who'd you go for 4 and 5, Tommy?
I'm going Dake 4, Cox 5, Gwiz 6, Green 7, and I cannot. I mean, that is such a freakish American team. I mean, that is insane. I got to go Cox 5. I'm going Dake 4 because I just think he's had a
great year. I think he's only taken a couple losses.
Right. I'm going Cox 5 because he's got two medals. He's never not medaled.
Never not medaled. And hey, do you think Dake and Taylor are training together because they know that Dake's going down for 2020? Or do you think that Taylor just doesn't care?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I mean, they've been training together a lot. They've been all the time.
I think it's because Dake's going down. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously they're friends, but man, that's, I mean, you know, David's life's been built around making an Olympic team. And if Dake is in his way, I don't think that friendship is going to trump that. I don't know.
Not for like deep camaraderie training camps together. I mean, it's one thing to work out together at a national team camp, but it's another thing to,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, man, like if you look at Dake's weight class, it's Russia, USA, Russia, USA, Azerbaijan, Hasanov, and then it's Russia, Russia, Belarus, who I believe was a Russian, Russia, Russia, Iran, Russia, USA, another Azerbaijan, which I believe is a Russian, Russia, Russia, Uzbekistan, who I know was in fact a Russian for sure.
Right.
I mean, good God.
We didn't even mention Gilman.
Gilman's got a chance. He just took. Gilman is backed up.
He stepped onto the scene and got a silver, and he's probably wrestled like a top 5 in the world guy since then.
Well, I believe he lost at Pan Ams, and then he did pretty well at Yasser Dogu, right?
I want to say he won it.
Okay, so I'm on Flo's rankings right now, and they have him at number 7.
Okay.
So I think he must have lost to the Cuban guy, and I don't know, man, I don't recall that if he won the Acerdogu or not. Yeah, I mean, Gilman's, I have a hard time seeing, okay, Stieber, he's all over the board, because he did just beat Haji Ali not too long ago. But Stieber. Well, but he's been taking some L's, Tommy.
Yeah, but I literally forgot about him.
Oh man, that's sad. It's a Buckeye.
Well, I'll tell you this about Logan Stieber. I'm so far out of it that it's hard for me to remember all this stuff. But I've seen Logan 3 or 4 times this summer. Mm-hmm. He doesn't look good. He looks great. He looks way more
like you saw him just up. Like going to a restaurant. Or you saw him in the wrestling room.
I've seen him in the room. Okay. I've been around him and literally just. Out of sight, out of mind. I didn't think of him in this, but I would put him. I would put him around the Cox level, the way that you know he's had some big wins this year too.
Yeah, he beat Haji Oliva, who's ranked number 1.
Yeah, and he's a world champion. Logan's
but
a world champion.
He also lost to Jaden Ironman, who's tough. Yeah, but as far as winning a world championship, you know
he did. And then he had a tough loss at Acerdogu.
And he almost lost to Evan Henderson. Remember that?
Yeah, but I'm just not going to think that Logan Stieber can't win a world championship. It's not in my blood. I'm from Ohio. I know the guy. So he's going back up on my list. I forgot about him. So
all right, fair. If that's what you say, Tommy, that's what you say. Stieber, until Stieber can provide some more consistency, he is a little lower on my list.
Yeah, I got
you. You think Zane? So did you see this? Maybe this is probably the last thing we'll talk about. We've been talking for a while. Have you seen the Zane Oliver thing? Are you too far out?
Yes,
it's shenanigans. I don't know. Like if the guy doesn't. I mean, listen. If I'm Rutherford, I'm probably wrestling because I love wrestling. I'll wrestle anyone at any time. But if the dude doesn't want to wrestle, leave the man alone, right? It's not like this isn't like fighting where you're never gonna fight him. You know. If they're ducking you, you're going to see him at the Open. You're going to see him at the trials. Like, just say, all right, sucker, I'll see you in 6 months, you know?
It will happen.
It has to. Right. So, who do you give the edge to if they wrestle today?
Who would I take?
Yeah, you're taking Oliver or Rutherford.
Today, I'd take Oliver because I think Zane's been taking some time off.
Okay, come on. He's in peak form.
I think I'd take Oliver in a freestyle match. I do.
Okay. All right. So now who wins 65 kilo next year?
Who you got?
I'll be taking Zane. I mean, I don't know. He's just so freaking good. And I know that Oliver's beaten him before. But the progression Zane has showed, I mean.
I mean, Zane's a freak. But I've watched him get taken down so many times against so many people.
Who, Zane?
And, yeah. That I just feel like in a freestyle element, I just don't think his dominance is going to be as prevalent.
Obviously you take away the dominant top, and he never got ridden. So you know, he's great on both top and bottom. But man, he made the team 2 years ago, so it's hard saying that.
I mean, he's
not going to improve.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm going with him until proving.
All right, man.
All right. And wow, technical difficulties, which happens in our show since we're not that technical.
What a way to go out, Ben.
Well, you know what? It is kind of fitting with all the technical difficulties we've had over the – I can't remember if this is 2 years. It's got to be 3 years. I do believe we started this show in 2015. Yep. So yeah, it is a very fitting way to go. I thought that was a fun show. We didn't have too many topics to talk about, and I thought we nailed them. I think Tommy, I am going to try to get you to come back on once you get back from the World Championship because that's going to be
it. Dude, I'm in. Okay, I particularly want to come on and talk about topics that it's like we should talk about that as opposed to like a current event. It's like, hey, let's talk about this part of the sport or this specific matchup or this duel or whatever, so we can really get after it.
Yeah, well, that's going to be a lot of fun. So, Tommy, I will tell you, thank you. You know, I think we were friends before this, but I think we've learned a lot more about each other. I think it's been a blast. To all you who've listened, thank you guys. I think you guys have had fun. I appreciate you guys listening. Tommy, you have any farewells to say?
No, thank you, Ben. I've had a blast, and I do think we've become better friends. I've had a lot of enjoyment just hearing from the folks that enjoyed our podcast, and not going away forever, but going away in the traditional sense, and we'll be around always, and thanks for everything, and thanks for Defense Soap and Dollarama Mats for helping us support this podcast. That without them, this would have been a lot tougher to do.
Absolutely. So, guys, thank you again. Stay tuned. It is going to be about 2 weeks. I'll be back with you. I'll have a new guest host, and we will be rolling. So thanks, guys. 109 episodes. What a journey. Tommy, I'll talk to you later.
See you, brother. Thank you.